I am everything. Bhakti, thus thinking, Bhadyate is bound. Translation. But a householder whose mind is attached to his home and who is thus disturbed by ardent desires to enjoy his money and children, who is lusty after women, who is possessed of a miserly mentality, and who unintelligently thinks, everything is mine, and I am everything, is certainly bound in illusion. Purport. Although one may try by various analytical or psychological processes to detach the mind from illusory family attachment, one will inevitably be drawn back into the network of material attachment unless the heart is purified by Krishna consciousness. A miserly householder thinks only of his own family or community without mercy for outsiders. Being egoistic, lusty, attached, and always disturbed by ardent desires to enjoy money and children, a materialistic householder is hopelessly bound in a web of anxiety. Are you okay there, or is the sun a bit too direct? Good. Yeah, actually, it's quite different. And I want to turn to my neighbors.
Yes.
This is material. This is really material consciousness. And it takes the image of the last of this chapter. Eva Riha Shayakshita Hridayo Dhirayam Achyataska Anudhyayam Vrito Nam Vishate Samaha. That's because of its foolish mentality. A householder whose heart is overwhelmed by family attachment is never satisfied. Constantly meditating on his relatives, he dies and enters into the darkness of ignorance. And again, a short interval. Andamrishate Tamaha indicates that in his next life, an attached householder will certainly be degraded because of his primitive mentality of bodily attachment, which is called Mudha-di. In other words, after enjoying the sense gratification of considering oneself the center of everything, one enters into a lower species of life. Somehow or other, we must fix our minds on Lord Krishna and come out of the darkness of ignorance to our real life in Krishna consciousness. Thus, in the third voice of the humble servants of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, the 11th and 17th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Lord Krishna's description of the Varnashram system.
Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhupada Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vasati Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
As you come to review this gathering, consider the future. Haditana Mada Nebhyo Vaishnava Nebhyo.
So this chapter is called Description of the Varnashram System, 11th canto, chapter 17. Next chapter is called Description of Varnashram Dharma. So the same theme is going to continue. This chapter, those of you who have been following it, you would know that first of all, or at least the substantial part of the chapter, was dedicated to brahmachari life, different principles and aspects of life as a brahmachari. Well, first of all, there was a description of the conditions in Satya Yuga. And there was no Varnashram in Satya Yuga. There was just one ashram, it is said, that was the Paramahamsa ashram. Everyone was just very elevated on the spiritual platform in so many ways, so there was no need for Varnashram. And rather, of course, Satya Yuga, what is the process, prescribed or popular process, that was silent meditation. So everyone would simply just spend their time basically sitting and performing silent meditation. And actually, we mentioned at that time, some number of weeks ago, that a description in Brihadaranyakatamrita of Gopakumar gradually making his way up from the earthly level in the direction of Goloka Vrindavan. But in between, in the meantime, he stops at various other places and planets on the way. So one of the planets that he stopped on was, well, it was either Janaloka or it was one of those planets right up there, right by Brahmaloka in that vicinity. And there, that's what people do, not just in Satyayuga either, but that's what they do. So Gopakumar, our wonderful hero in the second part of Brihadaranyakatamrita, he arrived there. Everyone was sitting meditating, and it's really just, as they say, Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. There was, no one was saying anything, doing anything. It was just full meditation. Our Gopakumar, his mood was somewhat different. He arrived there, and the Supreme Lord, as the subject, the object of meditation, he was moving around there also, and when Gopakumar saw him, oh, he became so inspired. And he just called out, Gopal! Gopal! Because even though it wasn't Gopal as such, but still it was the Lord, and he was reminded. And those meditators suddenly came out of their meditation, and they told him, be quiet. Just meditate. Okay, so Gopakumar felt a little intimidated. So that was the beginning of the chapter. Satyayuga was described, and how people used to just do things like this, and there was no Dharmashram. And then there was a description of Pratyayuga. And that is when Dharmashram started, or was revived in Tretiyuga. So there was a description of all the different varanas, Brahmacharya Vaishya Sutra. Fairly brief. Anyway, some description was there of the four varanas. And then the description developed, somewhat extensive description, first of all, of the Brahmacharyas in Tretiyuga. Many of the principles are universal, and they apply today as much as in Tretiyuga. Perhaps in terms, in some cases, of time, place, and circumstance, to some degree, but otherwise, many of those principles apply today for the Brahmacharyas. And then there was a description of how some of the Brahmacharyas, well, all the members of the Brahmacharya and Vaishya Varanas, they all go to the Gurukul for quite some years, maybe 20 years, 15 to 20 years, something like that. They all go to the Gurukul and study under the spiritual master. We made the point also at that time that Srila Prabhupada, in terms of Deshakala, Patra, place, time, and circumstance, Srila Prabhupada applied the same principles of Brahmacharya in appropriate ways in terms of the circumstances in Kali Yuga. Prabhupada also applied this to Brahmacharinis, young unmarried ladies. So, of course, they didn't go to the Treta Yuga, they didn't go to the ashram of the spiritual master. They just stayed at, the young unmarried ladies stayed at home. But Srila Prabhupada replied that there was a place also and a really meaningful role for young unmarried women who really wanted to progress spiritually, to practice, to live in an ashram as brahmacharis and seriously focus on Krishna consciousness. But otherwise, the brahmacharis, particularly the description was there, some of them, it was clear, even from the outset, it was quite clear. And it would be confirmed as time went on, they would remain brahmacharis for the rest of their lives. Sri Sri Bhadrana, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sri Giri Gavadanki. So this is what would happen to them. And then when they sort of graduated, so to speak, from the Gurukul, then they would do that. They would just continue living in an ashram or traveling and preaching. Some those from Brahmin families, Brahminically natured ones would take sannyas even at an early age. So there was this description of the brahmacharis, and then there was a description which we are in right now of the grihasthas. And as things will develop, we'll see in the next chapter 18 description of vanashram dharma, that the vanaprasthas and sannyasis are described throughout that chapter. So that was there. So here we read these three verses and two short purports and very graphic descriptions of the attached householders, and attached even to the point of, it appears almost like insanity, or it's at least verging on that I am so indispensable in the lives of these people that, wow, it's just, if it wasn't for me, their positions would be hopeless. They would be helpless. There's a description of our great Bhagavata commentator, Sridhar Swami. You may have heard his name mentioned before. He was living prior to Lord Chaitanya, but he was a devotee, and it's a long story, but he wrote commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam. He was connected with Maya Gardens to some degree. He was actually a member of a group called the Bhagavats. And the Bhagavats were Maya Gardens, except they had a sort of Krishna conscious angle to them. But at least officially, they were Mayavadis. And in many ways, they were adhering to concepts of Mayavad like that. So Sridhar Swami was one of them. But he was a sort of like undercover devotee. He was really a devotee, actually. He really was. He was not just some mixed person, half Mayavadi, half Vaishnava. He was actually a devotee, and therefore he was able to give such a profound commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam that Lord Chaitanya accepted it as the foundational commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam. So, Srinivas Swami, when he was young, he was about to leave home, and then a similar situation to this arose. Not that he was like this, but people were saying things like this. How can you leave home? What about us? What are we going to do? You have to look after us. And he was seriously considering leaving home at a fairly early age and taking sannyas and really dedicating himself heart and soul to Krishna consciousness. But then suddenly all this pressure was put on him, and he became a little confused. What should I do? Should I leave? Or should I stay? He was being severely pressurized. So as he was contemplating like this, considering the situation, one baby bird, he was sort of under a tree, near a tree, and there was a bird's nest in the tree. One baby bird fell out of the nest onto the ground and got up and sort of walked away and flew away. And she got sorry, without the help of the mother, without anybody's help, just did it. And Srinivas Swami, when he saw that, then he understood, Krishna's in control, not me. So let me not become bewildered into thinking, I am so indispensable to these poor people, the old ones, the ones my age, the young ones. I am just so important that if I don't stay, there's going to be a total collapse of this whole family setup. So he turned around and walked away, and that was it. That was it. And he became the famous Srinivas Swami. Yeah. So, of course, there is Grihastha Ashram. That is another thing from what we've just read about here. That is really another thing. This is really Griha Baby. This is just blatantly Griha Baby type of consciousness. Grihastha, of course, means a Krishna conscious, ultimately a Krishna conscious householder or household couple, Grihasthas, who are there as husband and wife and doing their duties properly as husband and wife in relation to each other, in relation to their children, in relation to their parents and other family members. But in a very focused Krishna conscious way. And it is very specifically everything, their relationship and everything in their lives is geared like that. And for Krishna consciousness. And they're not seeing each other at all as facilities for sense gratification. But truly as partners on the path back home, back to Godhead, for the time being. And when the husband would come to the point of around 50, Panchashuradham Vanam Vrajet. When you get to 50, go to the forest, vanana. Go to the forest, or the application is, she takes sannyas. And when the husband, well, there was also vanaprastha, which we'll read about as time goes on now. The vanaprastha, the husband and wife, would remain together for some time. But just travel to the holy places and just be absorbed in Krishna consciousness only. And then, in the second half of the vanaprastha stage, they'd actually separate. The wife would go home to the older sons, and the husband would move in the direction of sannyas, effectively be living as a sannyasi, and then take sannyas. So that's real grihastha. And Bhaktivedanta Thakur, he sings Grihetano, Vanetano, what is it? Sada Harivolo Dako. Yes. And there in a number of his songs, there are lines like that, basically. That if you are at home with your family, or if you're living in the forest, then it doesn't matter. Whatever your situation is, just chant Sada. Kirtaniya Sada. Always, just always chant the holy names of the Lord. Be absorbed in Krishna consciousness. So in that way. And in another song that Dhananjaya Gita, Bhagavad Gita was singing about preaching to people and bringing people to the Namahata and introducing them to Lord Nityananda, who will then give them the holy name. And Bhagavata Gita also is singing that whether you live at home as a householder, whether you live in the forest, in other words, if you take sannyas, I don't mind. If you are constantly chanting Hare Krishna, I want your association. I want it. Not just I'm prepared to accept it. I want your association. So this way, Krishna consciousness is a transcendental process and not a material process. And when carried out nicely in any varna, in any ashram, when the particular duties are carried out really nicely in Krishna consciousness, then that is an ashram. Ashram means a place for spiritual development. That's what ashram means. A place for spiritual development. So in that sense, even grihasthas living at home in a house, maybe sort of a typical middle class house or something of that sort, but still, they're living in grihastha ashram. But there is no grihamedi ashram. There is no grihamedi ashram where, well, all these things go on as we just read. And particularly it's the husband and father here who is just enamored by his own supposed importance. That if I don't look after my children, oh, who will do it? If I don't look after my wife, she will die in separation from me. Catastrophe would be there. I have to protect her. And my parents, oh, without me, they'll just be lost old people, just kind of melting down into old age and death. So, material life, of course, means, in a very fundamental sense, it means that I feel I am important, I should be important. The initial seed for our being here in this material world is envy of Krishna. And envy, of course, it naturally entails feeling that whoever you are envious of, whatever is their position, whatever their facilities are, and all the trappings, the whole situation, actually you should have it. At least many parts of it, or some parts. This is envy. Otherwise, it's not envy. There has to be that feeling that I should be in that situation. I should have those facilities. That means envy, as opposed to some other type of emotion, negative emotion. So that envy of Krishna, it naturally entails, I should be the center. Why not me? He's got so many people serving him. Why can't I? At least let me have one or two. At least something like that for me. So here it is coming out. It is coming out, as Krishna says in 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Ishvarodha Aham Bhogi Siddharodha Bhavana Sukhi. It's all the same thing, isn't it? Just different perspectives on the same extreme, really pronounced material consciousness. I'm the controller. I'm the master. I'm the enjoyer. And naturally, I'm perfect. I'm highly qualified. And I'm powerful. And as a result of all of these things, I'm happy. So we have nothing against Grihastha existence in Krishna consciousness. Actually, for so many people, even the majority, the great majority, it is really the most practical situation for them to progress in devotional service, at least during a particular period in their lives. And we were just reading, it was Ramnavami some days ago, a week ago, and we read there, at the end of the 10th chapter of the 9th canto, how Lord Ram, he really took trouble to protect Sita. He rescued her. He took the trouble because he accepted her as his responsibility. As the Supreme Lord, he could have just immediately manifested any number of replacement Sitas. But he didn't do that. He took the trouble to make that great effort to rescue her, and he did. And Srila Prabhupada in the report, there is the second to last verse of the 10th chapter of Ninth Canto. Srila Prabhupada says that in this way Lord Ram is setting an example for householder men, that they really have to take care and not just feel that this is my prime enjoyable object or something along those lines. That's Grihastha. But to really take care and to be willing to take some trouble in Krishna consciousness, that's Grihastha. So, and Sita also was reciprocating in very wonderful ways. So Gopa in the book there makes the point that we have no problem with Krishna conscious Grihastha love. We have no problem with it when it is actually like that. But when it is like this, then we have a big problem. When one is in an ashram, meaning Brahmachari, Brahmachari, Grihastha, Anaprastha, Sannyas, then one should execute the duties and maintain the standards of that ashram in Krishna consciousness to the very best of one's ability. According to, you could say, the classical Vedic or Chaitanya Yuga concept of, well, particularly what is a Brahmachari, and as we'll read, particularly what is a Vanaprastha, and most particularly what is a Sannyasi. Certain of the principles or standards they would maintain in those days, in the Vedic times. And well, on one hand you could say they may not be possible or at least practical for people like us. On the other hand you could say Srila Prabhupada in his application of Vanashram within his movement, he didn't apply certain standards which we're going to read about, like wearing for the Brahmacharis and also for Vanaprasthas, and what to speak of Sannyasis. Just wearing some leaves, some tree bark, how would you do? And you could say, how would you do when you're distributing books on the street and you're in a tree bark? But how would you do anyway, even if you're living in the temple wearing tree bark? It's sort of otherworldly. And Srila Prabhupada, at least by our standards, and Prabhupada didn't apply that. The standards for Grihasthas pretty much are applied, actually. They're pretty much applied across the board. But we'll see also the standards for Vanaprasthas and particularly Sannyasis. Then, Prabhupada's application, in certain respects at least, was really different. But still, Srila Prabhupada, as the expert on everything and how to apply these ancient eternal principles of Krishna consciousness in the cases of different individuals, among many other things, Srila Prabhupada is expert at that. How to apply Vanashram without going too far one way or too far another way. Like Srila Prabhupada's contemporaries, some of them at least who were trying to preach, but they couldn't get this right. You know, what is a good standard for Brahmacharis or Brahmacharis? And even what is a good standard for people who are to be initiated? Prabhupada said 16 rounds, four regulative principles. It's deeply scientific, actually. But others of Prabhupada's contemporaries, four rounds, something, something, some rounds, whatever. And for Grihasthas, oh, Hare Krishna, no regulative principle is just sort of a hope. Do your best. Something like that. No regulative principles. But we see Srila Prabhupada for the Krishna conscious Grihasthas, four regulative principles. Not just as, you know, try your best if you can after some time when you get older or something along those lines. So Shivananda was really very, very expert in everything, including these standards of Varnashram. And also Brahmacharis and Varnaprasthas, there wasn't even isn't so much of a Varnaprastha ashram, but also for sannyasis. So, and not mixed Brahmacharis who are half Grihastha. Sometimes they are referred to as Brahmacharis. Because there's the Brahmastra window, you know. It explodes. Big explosion. So a so-called Brahmachari, who may be externally have the trappings, but actually their serious contemplation and attraction, serious, towards household life. So he's not really doing his best to maintain Brahmachari standards. I remember back in the good old days, in the 70s, we would call such people Brahmastras, because sooner or later they're going to explode. But the problem would be sometimes that instead of alright, accepting Grihastha Ashram, they would just become Grihamadins, and everything is just wasted. Terrible shame. So as a Brahmachari, or Brahmachari, one should make one's best effort, maintain the standards nicely. If one doesn't know what they are, one should, but if one doesn't, one can find out easily, and then do one's best. If one's a Grihastha, then understand what are the standards. If one doesn't know, for example, what does illicit sex life mean in a Grihastha context, find out. You can ask. The information is available. And then one comes through to the later stages of one's life, 50 and beyond. And then one understands that, okay, now we must wind down the whole Grihastha mode, phase of our existence, and move in the direction of renunciation in for Krishna consciousness. So this is welcome, and this will help the individual, the movement, and society. Not that we will just remain Grihasthas until we are really elderly and just until death do us part. That is a material standard. It's not a Krishna conscious standard. So here we see it sounds almost incredible. How could a person be in a state of mind like this? But there are people in this state of mind. And certainly in many ways, there are people who have some degrees of this state of mind, even if they're not totally extreme. But such a person elsewhere, in the fifth canto, there's a description in the forest of material enjoyment around there. That such a Grihamadi, who's feeling that without me, how will things go on? As he gets older and he becomes less capable of providing, who find he is less dependable, and rather they get things done better if they just do them themselves, then they reject him. And in his old age, then he's just like an elderly dog. They throw him a few scraps, but actually they don't care for him. In fact, they'd rather park him off at an old folks home and go and see him maybe once a week for an hour. Maybe. Or once a month. Or something like that. And then he's out of their hair. And of course they can make the excuse that he'll be nicely looked after them. But basically, he's just out of their hair. That's the thing. Yes. So, in this way, his bubble, this bubble of his, of how everyone needs me, and without me, how would everyone survive? His bubble is slowly popped. Prabhupada coined this term being puffed up, like you puff up a balloon, and one little pin, pop, and your big, fancy, colorful balloon is just some useless little piece of rubber. You can try and blow it up again, but it doesn't work. So thrown away into the rubbish. So particularly as the children become teenagers and gradually move towards their 20s and into their 20s, and they become competent enough, and they don't need the father. They don't need the father. So, yes, his whole illusory situation is just stolen away from him, and he ends up as some useless old person who just sits around and watches television. So, whatever our ashram is, let us really try our best. Some can do better than others. It is also a personal thing. But let us do our best to really maintain the standards of the particular ashram we're in. If there's a need at some point to change, that can be done in a responsible way. And in this way we can progress. Otherwise, as described here, because of his foolish mentality, a householder whose heart is overwhelmed by family attachment is never satisfied, constantly meditating on his relatives, he dies and enters into the darkness of ignorance, Antartama. Antartama is actually a hellish planet, a very severe hellish planet. So such people, they go to some hellish situation. But the devotees go back home, back to Godhead. Hare Krishna. Any comments or questions, Maharaj? Any comment, question? Oh!
Sorry. I brought you in there. Excuse me. I heard something that I never knew. You said, please correct me if I'm wrong, if I misheard you. You said that the Vanashram was re-established in Kaita Yuga. Is that right? Is that what you said?
Srimad Bhagavatam says, we read it.
So, I understand the word re-established. I mean, you mean it was there before and then it got lost?
Just
went to pieces and
That's what I wanted to know. Well, what happens is, Sahasra Yuga Pariyantam Aharya Brahma Nandadu. Every day of Brahma, there's 1,000 cycles of the four yugas.
in Kali Yuga, Varnashram becomes lost, then there's a shift, dramatic shift, into Satya Yuga. In Satya Yuga, there's no need for Varnashram, because everyone is basically beyond it. They're so advanced and transcendental. So there's no Varnashram in Satya Yuga. But we read, it's here in this chapter of the earlier verses, when Treta Yuga begins, Varnashram begins again. So it was lost in the previous cycle of the four yugas, in the Kali Yuga. There was no need to re-establish it in the Satya Yuga. In the Treta Yuga, it's re-established. Okay?
And then the other thing I want to ask was coming down through the ages, does the standards of the Varnashram Ashram, does it change? Of course, you don't understand this, we don't have to be a tree bark anymore. But I mean, are they, do you understand? Are they changing?
Well, yes, everything is changing. At the end of Satya Yuga, well, in the beginning of Kali Yuga, the only one of the four religious principles left, you know, cleanliness, austerity, mercy, truthfulness, the only one left at the beginning of Kali Yuga, the earlier stages, is truthfulness. And it's very clear now that that truthfulness, since the beginning of Kali Yuga, it's become severely compromised. At the end of, at the beginning of Treta Yuga, austerity had been lost. At least in the most rigid and classic form, austerity had been lost. And then through Treta Yuga, then Dwapara Yuga, mercy and cleanliness were gradually lost. So, yes, the capacity of people to follow Varnashram, well, like we see, Prabhupada talks so much about Varnashram, but it's clear he didn't establish it in the rigid classical sense. Even in terms of ashram, he did really establish it quite clearly, but not according to those old or Vedic traditional concepts and standards like that. So, doubtless, other great acharyas, they would also, as time went on, make some modifications. Hare Krishna. Madhaji, please, now.
You want them? I don't know if that'll reach. Just come.
We gave an example of Shiva's story, and he's raising the responsible minister. And he left his home with a child's infant in the estate. So that how would that apply to us as common devotees? Because this question is common, especially with some of the ladies. But we feel that the history is not supporting them, there is more interest in maybe in service to the temple or in other spiritual activities. And then the parent is left to them to support the family and the community.
I think sometimes some of the husbands also feel that support. I think it works quite broadly. It depends on the particular situation of the particular individuals. But anyway, the thing is, one thing we've seen in the history of Israel is that Srila Prabhupada initially, he allowed young men to take sannyas. And even in some cases, a few, not a lot, but there were a few cases where there were young men who were married, and they're still young, in their 20s or perhaps, you know, maybe early 30s at the most. But they really like Tamal Krishna Goswami is a case that comes to mind. He was just recently married. Of course, they had no children. But he approached Prabhupada, "I want to take sannyas, I want to take sannyas." And Prabhupada initially discouraged him, but then he was so insistent over a period of time that Prabhupada allowed him. It was not though that Srila Prabhupada was sort of, you know, what could be called irresponsible in terms, or, you know, less than responsible in terms of allowing a few cases like him and Savitra, a few others who were already married, to take sannyas. Prabhupada generally discouraged when Tejas Prabhu, who still is quite a prominent devotee, a very nice devotee, he had been married for some, not a long time, but there was this pressure from some of the men, "Hey, come on, why don't you take sannyas?" Because he was quite a prominent devotee, a very successful devotee. So he approached Prabhupada and said, "Prabhupada, I'd like to take sannyas." And Prabhupada, it's an interesting story, the conversation that they had. Prabhupada discouraged him and wouldn't let the discussion go on any further at a certain point. He just told him. Prabhupada actually said, "Yeah, why do you want to take sannyas? There's so much trouble. You just got married not long ago. Your wife's a good devotee." And then the discussion developed. Prabhupada said, "Take some prasadam." He had a whole bowl of fruit on his table. "Yeah, take some prasadam, like a whole apple or banana or something." And he said, "Okay, took it." And he tried to continue the discussion. Prabhupada said, "Take some more prasadam." And in the end, he had both hands full of prasadam to the point they overflowed. And then he got to the next stage. Prabhupada didn't want to discuss it. Then I think the same or the next day, Prabhupada was giving darshan somewhere, maybe Vrindavan, Delhi. And so there's a room, sort of medium-sized room, full of devotees, Prabhupada's at the end, facing the door, addressing everyone. Tejas came, and nowhere to sit down. There was a spot, sort of in the middle, a little forward of the middle, little spot. He thought, "Okay, I'll go sit there." So he made his way through the devotees. You know the technique. Hand down,
sort of
indicating, and it caused a bit of a disturbance, of course. I mean, not a big disturbance, but devotees had to lift their knees up. And Prabhupada stopped and looked at Tejas and said, "Tejas Maharaj." That's all there. And everyone looked at Tejas. So this was, I would say, the general sort of orientation. Since then, or currently, in Islam, the GBC body, they had to decide all sorts of things, including things nobody else can decide. and things which are the most difficult things to decide, and even they sometimes have to decide things which are kind of undecidable, really, but make some sort of decision. So, there's a decision from the Jesus body, and it is really strictly applied. It really is strictly applied. No one is allowed to be put on the list, the waiting list for taking sannyas after some years, unless they have got, well, essentially permission or, you know, agreement from the one, and unless they've made concrete, and they can show that they've made concrete arrangements for the provision, providing for their children until the children are adults. So, you know, that's really enforced strongly. It's enforced very strongly. And of course, if the husband or the wife is just irresponsible, taking sannyas is one thing. You know, that at the very least, one can't be under 40. At the very least. And that's only in exceptional cases that someone around 40 will be allowed to. But, you know, if someone's just irresponsible and they just leave their family, husband or wife, because wives do it sometimes also, then what can you do? What can you do? Force them. Can't. You know, this is the material world, and the material world is a really difficult place. It's a really difficult place, particularly in California. It's terribly difficult. But definitely within ISKCON, I would say that we are doing our best, you know, pretty much within reason and the bounds of possibility to see that family units are not just particularly irresponsibly broken. Is that okay for the time being? Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai Prabhupada.